All right, let's go. Howdy, y'all. Thank you for tuning in on this episode of Tweeting with Teets. Today, I'm in East Texas with Coach Cody Crane of Caddo Mills Fosses. Coach, thank you for having me.
Glad to be here. Glad you came in and getting this thing rolling.
Yes, sir. So, Coach, the podcast, I like to learn about the coaches and your history. So what was your first influence into football?
My first influence had to be my dad. My dad was a coach. And so I was a field house rat and grew up in the field house. I got the opportunity to work for my dad whenever I was going to school a little bit and kind of volunteer coach around with him. And he taught me the baseline that I still use for football today, how to treat people with respect, how to create relationships with kids, and just the foundation principles of my philosophies offensively and defensively in the game of football as well.
So you started your high school playing career in New Mexico.
Yes, that's where I played. I was born in Graham, Texas, and dad worked for Leo Britton in both Vernon and Graham. And then he and my mom are both from New Mexico. So Army Salinas was in Portales, New Mexico. So he went back to his hometown, and once he got there, we stayed. So I was born in Texas but raised in New Mexico and played football in Portales, New Mexico.
So after your playing career, how did you know when did you know you wanted to become a coach?
You know, so whenever I was in high school, it was always something on my mind that, hey, I need to figure out what I want to do, what I want to major in college. And my dad asked me, he told me, like, we played golf at Portales Country Club all the time, and there was a lot of people out there, older men that I respect, that I grew up around. So I spent a lot of time talking to people like Bill Joy and Jim Harmon and Wayne Moore and Roy Rackler, just people, men of the community, and you know, real estate agents and insurance agents, and their advice was, because that's when technology was fixing to boom and going to do something in technology. But I knew no matter who I talked to, I knew I was going to be in education. I knew I was going to be a coach. I knew that from a pretty young age. And so whenever I did graduate and I went to school, I went into education, and that's what I started my major in.
Okay. That's incredible. So from there, you went to Mules. And the Panhandles, and how did you get that job? How did that come about?
Well, so that was my first job. Right. And Portales, New Mexico is on the eastern side of New Mexico, far east. We're 18 miles from Texas. Muleshoe is right across the border, about another 18 miles into Texas. So it was really close to my hometown. Or several people had retired in New Mexico. My principal that I had growing up retired and was in Muleshoe as that principal. Our head basketball coach at the time retired and was over there. An elementary teacher was a middle school counselor. Now, we had several people that had retired and it was in Muleshoe. So they had initially gone to try to hire my dad the year before. And it was right at the time that I was going to do my student teaching. He wasn't interested at that time going over, but that kind of got the ball rolling with me. And so a year later, after I did my student teaching and I worked at Portales High School for the spring semester, I knew I wanted to be in Texas. I knew I wanted to coach in Texas. So it just happened. I got over there. They had a middle school job opening, got over there and got in and got rolling with them.
What's the biggest difference between New Mexico and Texas, like football-wise? Or, you know?
And here's what I tell everybody, is Friday nights, I don't care where you play, if it's Alaska, Texas, Allen, the smallest school, Friday nights are competitive, and your competitive juices are flowing, and it's competitive. It's just the process of getting to Friday night is totally different in New Mexico and Texas. The emphasis here, the year-round process, the 7-on-7s, the summer strength and conditioning, our off-season programs, the process leading up to develop a player to get to Friday night is totally different here than it is in New Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, I love New Mexico. It's a beautiful state. So,
well, we're from the eastern side. Where we're from, is it super beautiful? But, yes, in the central, the northern part of New Mexico is very beautiful.
So at Muleshoe, you coach. You were under Coach Wood.
David Wood.
David Wood.
And, yes.
And David Wood went on to win the 2008 state championship. You know, kind of a legend himself.
Yes, sir. So Coach Wood was there for 2 years. He was there, and they were, I believe, and I don't want to mess this up, they were 1-9 his first year. They were 5-5 his second year. I remember that first summer we were about this time doing our coaches stuff, and I was riding with Coach Wood, and he said, we need to win, and we need to win now. And the undefeated regular season, that first, I had nothing to do with me, but I just got there at a good time. Mm-hmm. But that first year that I was there, I was a middle school coach, and our high school was undefeated in the regular season, won a playoff game, and kind of set everything up for the years to come. The next year I was at the middle school, is pretty good. And then my first year at the high school was in 2000, and it was a semifinal run, undefeated, 14-1, played in the semifinals in Texas Stadium. So really set up to roll, and he just kept rolling. Coach Wood did a great job, and that's what I tell people is my dad was my first influence. He taught me so many things with kids and scheme, but Coach Wood really opened my eyes to a year-round total program and started my influence there.
What was the takeaway you took away from his program?
Just how to run a entire athletic program and incorporate the track and how the off season is supposed to be structured. He did a really good job with that and came into Muleshoe. And Muleshoe hadn't been successful. It was spotty way back when, but leading up to him getting there was not very successful at all. And then he turned that thing around and had it rolling and won a state championship. And in West Texas, you don't see many state champions coming out of West Texas.
Absolutely. He did a phenomenal job. And then so you also coach Lincoln Riley and Kyle Atwood, who's a head coach at Alice right now?
Yes. So they were whenever I got there, Lincoln and Kyle are the same age. Michael Johnson was in that same class. He's the head coach at Henrietta, and they were all freshmen. So was around them for 4 years and had great times and relationships with both those guys. Kyle Atwood remains one of my best friends to this day. We talk all the time. And Lincoln obviously got, you know, with all his successes, don't get to talk to him very much. But last week at Texas High School Coach Association, after he spoke, got to go shake his hand and see him and talk about the old times a little bit. So great to see those guys whenever we get to see them.
What was Lincoln Riley like in high school?
Lincoln was an outstanding competitor. He was extremely smart and cerebral football player. You know, he was a could see the field even whenever I'll never remember. We had a play that we based all of our stuff off, what we call 26 hammer, and it was a tunnel sweep, and we were playing Forney in the third round. And they over-adjusted because they knew what we were doing. And Lincoln checked that thing opposite and was able to tell them in the huddle and that what was going to happen whenever it happened, checked it opposite and ran the play. Just very intelligent, you know, even from a young kid.
He's a phenomenal coach, I mean, and then player as well.
You know, and whenever he went to walk on at Tech, and, you know, Coach Leach recognized his brains early and got him out of the playing into the coaching and, you know, just kind of went from there. And everything, you know, he's worked hard. He is extremely intelligent and has been rewarded for that in his career.
I mean, learning from Mike Leach is like, you know.
And he got in at a good spot at a good time. And then, you know, whenever what happened, Coach Leach's departure at Tech, and he got in at East Carolina with Ruffin. So great people. You know, Bob Stoops influenced him. He's been around some outstanding coaches.
Absolutely. I would consider him probably going to be one of the best head coach of all time. Just what he'd done as a offensive coordinator, like changing the game on the offense side.
Right.
I mean, he's running. I mean, he can run the ball. you know, with any running back. He can throw the ball, you know. He's taken Mike Leach's offense and he made it, you know, much more powerful with the option and that sort of thing.
He's extremely intelligent, you know, and his little brother's coaching too. His little brother's offensive coordinator at SMU. Great family, great mom and dad, outstanding people. So,
absolutely. And so, from Muleshoe, what made you leave Muleshoe?
So, there was a man named Tommy Essex. And Tommy Essex grew up with my dad and coached with my dad. Whenever my dad went back to New Mexico, Coach Essex went to Corpus Christi Cal Allen, and he worked for Bobby Davis and Don Black in Cal Allen. And Brent Davis was a young kid, and Coach Essex coached him. And so Coach Essex was one of a kind. I could tell you Coach Essex stories, but the English language can't do that man justice, who he was and what he did and what he did for kids. And we met him as young kids, both Coach Davis and I. And so whenever Coach Davis got the Alice job, he called Coach Essex, and Coach Essex basically made him hire me as a defensive coordinator and my brother as an offensive coordinator. So because that relationship with Coach Essex went as assistant head coach, and we had a great time. So even though Coach Davis and I did not, we knew each other, I guess, but really didn't know each other, we had that common friend in Coach Essex that put us together, that started an outstanding relationship.
And then, Alice, you guys did a wonderful job, and you ended your career there playing against the late Travis and the Garrett Gilbert. How was coaching Alice?
So, Alice, that football job is as good of a job as there is, period. Alice, Texas America love football. They take care of their football. You know, a quick story, the night – that season tickets go on sale to the public. There are people the week of camping out so they can be first in line to get the reserve tickets. Proud tradition, Spike Dykes, the former coach at Texas Tech, worked there. He wrote in his book, that's the best football job he's ever had, is being the high school head coach at Alice. Van Tom Watley worked there. Bruce Bush worked there. There is an unbelievable line of outstanding coaches. LG Henderson ended up being in Artesia, New Mexico, but he worked there as well. Just an unbelievable line. Whenever we got there, Alice had fallen on a few hard times. The first year we were 7-3, probably one of the few 7-3 teams that don't make the playoffs. Turn around the next year, had a really tough year, had some really bad things, injuries, horrible things happened to us that don't make the playoffs the next year, but then make the playoffs our third year, win a playoff game, and then our fourth year there, we're undefeated, 10-0, won the first district championship, I think, since 1963, first outright, first time we beat Cal Allen in school history, and ended up going to the third round and losing to Lake Travis in the third round. Probably one of my most memorable games. It was had the lead on them. They kind of jumped on us early, and the second quarter we had was unbelievable. Get us back in the game, going to halftime in the game, come back and end up taking the lead on them, had the lead starting the fourth quarter. And this is their third of 5 years of state championships in a row. Had the lead on them, and then Garrett Gilbert kind of took over and not throwing the ball, but running the ball, and we couldn't tackle him. And kind of funny thing is, Garrett Gilbert married Eddie Kilmer's daughter. Eddie Kilmer was the defensive coordinator in Muleshoe in 2000, that was the defensive coordinator for that semifinal team. So kind of not, but know Garrett Gilbert's wife really, really well.
That's pretty crazy.
Small world.
Small world, absolutely. So what you said that Alice was probably your favorite place to play. What made that stadium so special?
They call it the Sky Dome. There's a song written about it, and it was the turf there was voted the best natural grass field 2 years in a row whenever we were there, It was just the turf was unbelievable. It was an old stadium, but the tradition, the history, and just the aura of that stadium, whenever you got to the playoffs and had the opportunity to host a home playoff game, there was a human tunnel that escorted you from the stadium, probably a half a mile walk from our field house to the stadium. And it's just that place is really special, was special to us then, still special. Whenever we beat Cal Allen for the first time in school history, we were down 17 points at halftime. We were undefeated. They were undefeated. We were down 17 points at halftime. We come out, we run a punt back, we throw it and complete a long pass and have a drive to score. We beat them for the first time, and it was outstanding. We pull back into the parking lot. I bet there was about 5,000 people in that parking lot just celebrating and wanting to greet the kids. Football is extremely important in Alice. Henry Herrera was a superintendent there and longtime superintendent, and he took care of that school and that athletic program like none other. And so it was just a really neat place with all the people. We had a 7-person field maintenance crew, and they led us to every game. They would get there about an hour before us. They would go look at the locker room, and if it didn't meet their satisfaction, they'd clean it before the kids got there. Our kids knew the importance of football, and just really neat place.
I mean, beating Cal Allen is a milestone victory.
it was, you know, and Alice played in the semifinals 2 years in a row, which was in 99 and 2000. Long-standing tradition, but had never beaten them before in school history. And so having that opportunity to do that was just phenomenal.
And let me put you on the spot. How did you defend it, Garrett Gilbert?
So I don't know. Here's what we did. We played them on Thanksgiving, and we studied and looked and went back and forth, and out of our base 4-man front, we didn't know if we could get him stopped. We thought we might be a little stretched, a little too thin in the secondary. So what we did, and we didn't, I mean, we were supposed to – we didn't have school that whole week. Mm-hmm. We're off the whole week of Thanksgiving, and we're supposed to have practice at 8 a.m. or something. And we went to Coach Davis on Sunday and said, Coach, we're not ready. We got to have more time. So we brought practice up till that evening and spent all Monday morning trying to defend him too. So we ended up going to an odd front and kind of had a monster, a nickel guy that we could put in the box whenever they're 2x2 or 2 backs, and whenever they went to trips, move him out. And we just tried to come up with off the wall things because how good he was. And so we mixed that kind of maybe a little similar to what Iowa State is doing now with their third high safety type of stuff. Kind of, an infant of that plus what we did, you know, just kind of mix that together.
You kind of like drop like 8, but
we had that ability. We were either going to drop 8 or bring everybody, you know, because we thought to bring 5, to bring 6 was futile because their offensive line was so dang good. We had to outnumber them and play, so it had to be all or none, mm-hmm. you know, and so but it was a mix up, and they got on us early and scored on us early. But then that second quarter, we kind of got rolling the second and the third quarter and got in the game and was up until they run the kickoff back.
So from Alice, you go to San Angelo Central.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that job come about?
Well, so that was right at the time of Coach Essex's funeral. Coach Essex passed away. And
rest in
Coach,
peace.
Yes, sir. Coach Davis got in on that job. Don't know how. And coming back from Coach Essex's funeral, we went, stopped into San Angelo, spent the night, looked around a little bit. And then it was probably a week or two later, they called him and offered him that job. My brother and I went with him. We started the same day that he started, which was invaluable for me whenever I became an athletic director, to see how you start a program from the first day. because I'd never seen that before. And so we started the first day with Coach Davis, and San Angelo at that time was on, I think it was an 18-game losing streak. It was on the internet, and blogs were saying, you know, we're stupid for going there. You can't win in San Angelo. There's no way. And Coach Davis did an outstanding job. You know, we were 0-8 that first year. I don't remember what the losing streak got up to. I tried to block that out. But every week in the paper, here's another loss, here's another loss, here's another loss. And week 8, we lost to Lubbock High week 7. And Lubbock High was the weakest team on our schedule. And once we lost to Lubbock High, you know, it kind of looked pretty bleak. We had Lubbock Coronado the next week. And Coronado was pretty decent. Everybody was down. And I remember our defensive meetings and said, you know, hey, we got to go. We're not done with this thing. We could go. And we beat Coronado at home. And then Tascosa was pretty dang good. And we had to go to Amarillo the next week and beat them in Amarillo. So finished with 2 in a row to propel us to offseason. And we got to offseason and had a great offseason, ended up making the playoffs the next year and winning our first round playoff game that next year. And then losing to Arlington Martin in the second round. And then the next year, won the first outright district championship, beat Amarillo High in Amarillo High. Was one of the weirdest games that I'd been a part of. But they have the ball moving it to beat us at the end. And that week in the paper, there was an article written about their field goal kicker, how he had never missed a field goal ever. So they were driving at the end. We called timeout and adjusted kind of what we're doing. They ran the wing tee. And that head coach there was the coach that was at Forney that beat us in 2000. Oh, wow. So he was in Amarillo High. But we called timeout and added a flip coverage to surround our people, safeties around where we thought they were running the ball. End up getting them shut down, and they miss a field goal. Mm-hmm. So now we have the ball, and we go out, and the first play we fumble the ball. And they get it again, and we stop them 3 in a row, and that kid misses again, and we won the district championship in Amarillo, which was, from where we started with that losing streak to win the district championship in 3 years. And then after that, I left, and then, you know, Coach Davis, my brother, they carried that thing on, had some great successes going undefeated, winning multiple district championships, playing Allen in the third round in San Angelo was the most packed house I've ever seen, and that thing was rolling.
So your brother is actually the head coach there now.
He just got that job, yes, sir, this spring. And so really proud for Coach Davis that got to go back to South Texas to Gregory Portland, and my brother that had busted his butt for Coach Davis for a long time that got that opportunity to get that job.
Congratulations to him. Since you've been the head coach for a while, have he been learning from you?
Yeah, well, yes, I think so. You know, and it's different. They're at a 6A school, and so we've always shared ideas back and forth, and we always talk about it. And I mean, this morning at 7 a.m., he FaceTimed me to talk football, and that's what we do. That's who we are. Whenever Dad's around, we're talking with him as well. So it's a lot of football talk. And yes, I'm sure he's learned some things from me, and he calls it and has the familiarity that he could call and ask questions from time to time. But I do the same to him too. We're learning from each other all the time.
So what made you go defense and him offense?
You know, it was just the path that I could move up on. I was an offensive line coach what I started, and I saw myself as growing up on the offensive side of the ball and being an offensive coordinator. But whenever I started, I was in Mule Shoe, and to move from the middle school to the high school, that path was outside backers coach. And so I didn't care. That's where I wanted to go, so I went to him. And Eddie Kilmer influenced me, and Tommy Essex influenced me, and some really good – my dad was a defensive coach. And so that's where I started. And then whenever I became a head coach, I thought I needed to go to the offensive side of the ball. So I went to the offensive side of the ball for 2 years, in Groesbeck, and then 2 more years in Alice. And then that just wasn't me. That wasn't my personality. I didn't enjoy it. So at that time, I went back to the defensive side of the ball, and I've been on the defensive side of the ball for the since then.
What didn't you enjoy about being on the offensive side?
Coaching quarterbacks. I'm a pretty passionate and energetic guy, and and I'm kind of exaggerating here, but like whenever the quarterback threw it bad and threw it behind the receiver, I'd say, hey, you got to lead your receiver. Well, no joke, coach. You don't think I know that? I know that I can't throw it behind him, and get your footwork right. I mean, that's just not me. I'm pretty passionate. I like to go get in the middle of those safeties and run and jump and be crazy. And so that just – it wasn't my personality to coach quarterbacks. And I think as a head coach, here's where I couldn't justify in my mind as a young head coach is – developing quarterbacks and going through quarterback school was a top priority. Well, you do that during the offseason. So for me to go with 3, 4, 5 quarterbacks while we had 70 kids over there, I didn't like that. I didn't think that was right. I didn't think that was good. So I didn't feel like I could develop quarterbacks well enough as a head coach, And so I felt like I needed to be with them. So Bruce McDonald was our offensive coordinator in Groesbeck. Then he got that Groesbeck job whenever I left. And he was there for 2 years, and then he left to come join us in Gonzales. So whenever he came, I knew I had full trust in him. So I moved back to the defensive side of the ball. Our defensive coordinator, Coach Lasser, needed a little secondary help. I moved back, not to coordinate it, just to help Coach Lasser in the back end, and turned over the office to Coach McDonald.
What's your specialty on defense? Is it D-line?
Secondary. Whenever I was young in the profession, volunteering for Dad, he made me coach offensive line on offense and secondary and defense. And his philosophy was you got to know offensive line and secondary to really be able to know and put together the a game plan and how to adjust it, because that's where most of your adjustments come from.
So being a secondary coach or specialty, what's something that grinds your gear on the field stuff?
What grinds my gears is what we try to teach, and I guess I'm going to go about it like this. What we try to teach is we think to be a great defensive secondary football player, you got to be great with your eyes. You have to have an eye progression. And how I try to – the analogy I give our kids is the first time you get in to drive a standard car. You get in to drive a standard car and you start sweating. You're nervous. You don't know what's going on. You put in the key and put the clutch in and trying to figure out how to get it in reverse. And then boom, 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 kill it. And then you kill it, and then you kill it over and over and over. And then a year later, whenever you get in to drive that same standard car, you don't think about it. You unlock the car. You get in. You push on the clutch. Boom, put it in reverse, feather it, and now you're going. And so we teach them to play with their eyes and the eye progression, and we work that really hard. And then whenever we don't have great eye discipline, grinds my gears.
Is it with the spread kind of just like evolving from from football kind of evolving from like the early 2000s to what it is now, from a kind of a power football wing team
right.
to what it is now. How tough is it to defend, a passing offense?
So here's the deal is that's what we run. That's what my brother run. And so for a long time, all spring, whenever we're drawing stuff, we draw spread up. And that's what we talk about. That's what we discuss is defending the spread. So we work it and figure out ways to defend it. There are things that are extremely tough. I'll never forget. So here's kind of what happened is we were – my dad was wing T. Mm-hmm. So my brother and I grew up wing T influence. And then Coach Davis was wing T. And Coach Davis called the offense – while Kevin was the quarterback's coach that first year in Alice. We were 7-3, missed the playoffs. And Coach Davis had really good foresight and said, hey, you know, we'll may never, the game is moving. We need to start looking at the spread. So he made my brother the offensive coordinator and said, you go learn from whoever you need to learn from to learn the spread and to call it. So Kevin came to Todd Dodge, who was at South Lake Carroll at that time. And our offense has a lot of his principals, because that's who my brother learned from. He called him. He still has a relationship with him today. I think they played golf a couple weeks ago in San Angelo. He saw him and talked to him at coach's school. So Kevin came and learned from Todd Dodge. So we go in that first spring that he's implementing the spread, and we're running a halves coverage, cover two, and they run smash. So the outside receiver runs a 5-yard stop, and our corner jumped him. The inside receiver ran a corner, and our safety's coming over the top. We have it defended as good as you can defend it, and the quarterback threw it and made that guy drift away from the safety to where it made the safety further for the safety to go, and he couldn't get there. And so that was the first time I thought, well, goodness, you know, there's something to this, because what they could do, and there's so much space out there. You know, the days of the old goals in defensive football, stop them for under 200 yards offense, hold them under 7 points, all that stuff is gone. It's out the window. All of our defensive team goals are momentum goals. We want to stop them the first series that they have the ball in the first half. We want two or more turnovers. We want three or more what we call turkeys, three and outs. So if we do that, and then we want to not give up a touchdown after our touchdown. And so all of that's momentum. So we could be great, maybe give up 35 points, but hit a lot of those goals and be a great defensive unit. But yeah, we defend the spread all the time. But right now our schedule, we have quite a few wing T teams on our schedule. Communities wing T. We were supposed to scrimmage Terrell. We're not scrimmaging them, and they were wing T. Aubrey is wing T. Quinlan Ford was wing T. And last year we played PG in the playoffs, and they're wing T. So we have quite a few wing T teams that we have to defend.
Is it tough just kind of preparing for a defense when, you know, you're playing spread offense and a wing team?
It's different. You know, our kids get used to playing in space, and now we get and have to go put our hands in the dirt and be tough. And last year our football team did a great job with that.
Yeah, you guys had a phenomenal season. You guys went undefeated in the regular season, went into the fourth round of playoff,
yes,
defeating the state defending champion, Pleasant Grove.
Yes, sir.
That was a milestone victory for the school. How did it feel for you?
You know, so we got to Caddo 2 years ago, and in our administration, the leadership at this school is second to none. And it was a no-brainer when offered the job. It was a no-brainer whether we're going to take it or not, because of the leadership and the vision and the culture and everything that Mr. Allison, Miss Everett was our high school principal, wanted in place. Now she has moved on to the administration building, and we have a new high school principal, but he's a former coach, player as well. But they set the foundation, our school board, and allow us to do our job and expect us to do our job. So that victory was special. But whenever you look at it on YouTube, and our superintendent is on the field celebrating like crazy with our kids, it's pretty sweet. It's pretty special.
Absolutely. It's a milestone victory for the program. So let's kind of go back towards so you went from before Grossbeck, you were at Grossbeck. How did you come about that job?
You know, it was strange. You never know. I'd applied. I've interviewed over and over and over and over. And to the point, you know, to where I thought, well, maybe I'm not meant to get a head job. And then out of the blue, I get a phone call in my office in San Angelo. And the only person that ever calls on my office phone was my brother. And so he was in my office talking to me. I didn't have any cell phone service, and that's why he called me on my But he was in there, and he walked out, and it was about a minute or two later that phone rang, and I thought it was my brother because he always called. I was fixing to answer, you goofy, why are you calling? You just left. But it was a guy named Dr. Ron, and he asked me, he said, hey, are the Groesbeck job just came open. Are you interested in Groesbeck? I said, yes, sir, as I was trying to Google search, where in the world is Groesbeck, Texas? So I didn't know. I didn't know where it was. I'd heard of it, but that's all. I had no earthly idea. Well, kind of what happened, it was kind of strange that Dr. Rom was a coach, and he coached girls basketball. And one of his favorite players of all time is Joe Newman. Well, she was the assistant girls basketball coach in Alice. And so he would come to Alice and watch her. And he's a smart man. He's always looking. He always has a list of people that, in case the head football job comes open, who he'd call. But he had talked to our superintendent. He'd come to watch our football game. I'd never seen him. I'd never laid eyes on him. I'd never shaken his hand. But he had watched us and what we did and how we built that program in Alice. And Coach Newman, who is an outstanding coach, you know, had talked really, really good about us as well. So he called and asked if we're interested. I said, yes, sir, absolutely am. He said, well, can you be here whenever it was, Thursday, to interview? It's like, yes, sir, I'll be there. And so I went and interviewed for that job. I think they interviewed five or seven or something and ended up having the opportunity to get it. And so it was a great job around great people, and we loved our time there.
How did it feel to have a doctor here and, you know, the school and the community to look at you and say, we want you to be the leader of this school?
Well, it was pretty special. So Coach Essex had always said, it always said that whenever it's your time to get one, you'll get one. He said, you know, you got to know somebody. Somebody's got to know you, or you got to win the lottery, is what he always used to say. And I used to roll my eyes and say, Coach, it doesn't happen like that. People don't call anybody anymore. Well, he was right, and I was wrong. He was right about a lot of things. So it was very humbling to get a call from somebody and it wasn't, you know, I had to go interview and I had to go earn it, but it was, I mean, definitely got my foot in the door. And Dr. Rom with his research and Joe Newman, Joe Newman and I had a relationship in Alice, but not a great one. You know, they did girls, we did boys. Our paths crossed a little bit, but not a ton. But I'll be forever indebted to both of those two people for giving us our first opportunity.
So what was your favorite moment at Groesbeck?
Well, I got a picture of it right back over there. So whenever we got there, Groesbeck hadn't made the playoffs for 11 years. And Mahia was a bitter, bitter rival. They called it the Battle of the River. The Navasota River separated the two school districts that was like 8 miles apart or something. And Groesbeck hadn't beat them in 13 years. And it was a huge rivalry. And I'd been around some good rivalries, but this was pretty deep because how close we were. There was a lot of families that graduated from Groesbeck that lived in Mahia, that graduated from Mahia and lived in Groesbeck. Cousins, you know, it was the intensity of that rivalry was big time. And hadn't beat them in 13 years, and we beat them and made the playoffs our first year there. And that joy to sit there and watch, and it was really special for us as a coaching staff because we could feel and know how important it was. But for that community, I mean, they were on the field hours after we won that game. Finally, I told our coaches, I was like, hey, listen, we got to go. We got to go to work in the next morning. And I don't know who turned out the lights. I don't have a clue, but those people really – and that picture is our kids. They went and grabbed the Battle of the River sign, the Navasota River sign, and was bringing that over to our sideline. And it was – that was a super cool, neat moment.
That sounds amazing.
Yes, sir.
Would you say that was like let me put you on the spot. Would you say that's like the biggest rivalry you've been a part of?
You know, each school has a rivalry. you know, whether it is, we have some good rivalries here with Sunnyvale, but it was, you know, it's a fairly new rivalry. Alice had some really good longstanding rivalries, but as far as Permian and San Angelo Central, but and I don't even know that they play anymore, Grossbeck and Mahia, mm-hmm. which is sad to me, but that was pretty intense rivalry.
So I imagine after leaving Grossbeck, it was pretty tough to leave Grossbeck going to Gonzales.
You know, it was. We loved our time there, and the Gonzales job just kind of plopped out of the and landed in our lap. It was a little bit, you know, intriguing. They had won some playoff games the year before, and so it was intriguing. So we took that opportunity, but leaving those kids, leaving that community, there, you know, we still, Ricky Rand is a big booster and still talk to him a lot, and just great people and great relationships there.
What, so how did the Gonzales job come about?
You know, it was a strange deal. For some reason, I just went and applied for it. Mm-hmm. And then that afternoon, one of their former superintendents who was helping direct the search called me. And we talked for about 3 hours. That was on, like, I think I applied on a Thursday. They called. He called that Thursday afternoon. We had talked. He called again Friday morning, Friday at lunch. Dr. Strozier called me Friday afternoon to ask me to interview Monday morning at 8 a.m. So I go and interview Monday morning at 8 a.m. And as I'm driving home, I got a call and offered the job. And so that moved so fast. It was unreal. And it just, you know, just kind of flopped in my lap. Mm-hmm. And I felt like, you know, that is the Lord pushing us that direction. And we took it and had a great 5 years in Gonzales.
So one thing you mentioned earlier was the reason why you selected the job because of administration. And one of the things I've been seeing on Twitter and is like the amount of coaching jobs that are available, that a lot of coaches are leaving the profession. And then there's been a poll from coaches that the administration is the number one factor, mm-hmm. Like 50%.
Right.
What's the number one factor for you when selecting a job?
Administration. You know, absolutely. Administration. And I'll tell you the truth, too, with this job, it was a great opportunity for my personal kids. Mm-hmm. You know, this school district is second to none. The education opportunities here, with us moving here, it was the administration that got us interested in wanting this job. And then the opportunities for my wife and my kids closer to my wife's family. Mm-hmm. And so they got to be around their grandparents and a lot more. And so it was a neat opportunity.
How old are your kids?
I have it will be a junior and a seventh grader.
Is junior playing?
He does. He does.
What is he playing?
We'll probably play receiver.
Receiver?
Yes, sir.
So you're looking a bit thankful for Adam this year?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's always fun to watch a coach kid play. You
know, right. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. So, Gonzales, what was your favorite moment there?
Our last year, we tied for the district championship. And the first game of district we played was against Pleasanton, and we had a pretty decent lead on them, and they had a receiver that was like 6'7", that was really good. They could throw it up, and he could make play after play after play. But they came back and tied us, and we went into overtime. And whenever we were in overtime, they scored and kicked a field goal. We got the ball, we scored, and we called timeout. And we had a great group of seniors and called them up there and said, hey, this is your senior year. This is your time. We could kick it or we could go for it from the three-yard line and see. And they said, let's go, coach. And so that was – the kids were good enough, cared enough that we involved them in the decision. And it's and they made the decision what they wanted to do. And so we got it in the end zone and scored and won that game. And then that was an outstanding moment. And then we get to the last game of the year and we're playing Bernie. And Bernie was ranked, I think, 8 in the state at the time. And they were good. And we came in and I really felt like our kids out-toughed them. You know, just were tough kids and really got after it that game. And we beat them and it wasn't even close. And so, you know, just that feeling of pride. And so we ended up tying for the district championship there and, you know, making a little playoff run. It is pretty neat.
So now you've been here, this is your third season here?
Yes, sir.
And the second season, obviously we just said that you defeated the Pleasant Grove and that's a milestone victory for you. How can you take this victory and propel into the next level?
Well, we just got to learn with it. And this is a new team. This is a new dynamic. And this team will take on a life and character all of its own. You know, a lot of those, we graduated a lot, hit us hard with graduation. But we have some good kids coming back too and some kids ready to step up, some kids ready to lead. And it's just gonna, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing who we are and what we will be. And we've talked a lot years back. I think it was in 07 and 08, Cattle Mills was really good. There was I think it was two brothers with last name Jeffries. One of them ended up going to play at UTEP. I think he's a coach out there now. And outstanding players, and they were great. Had a good 2 to 3 year run, and then after that went down. And so we've talked hard about maintaining that excellence, maintaining the standard that was set before them, and that our kids are honor bound to bust their tail for the people that had come before them.
So who are you looking to take that leadership role in 2021?
Well, Jacob Hall, he is a 4-year letterman. He is defensive tackle, offensive lineman, and is a phenomenal football player. He was extremely instrumental in our run last year, and he is really, really good. And Jason Thomason will be our quarterback. He has probably worked harder than any kid I've ever coached. He is up here all the time. He's throwing. He's gathering kids to do this, do that. And so those two kids should be major factors. Then we have, you know, other kids we're bringing back as well that should be outstanding leaderships. Logan Blutzel, Noah Luna, Carson Davis, Hunter Carter have several kids coming back that can lead us as well.
So Jacob Hall been starting for 4 years. What improvement did he need to make to in 2021 for this team to have the success that you want to have?
So he has had is outstanding highlights as there are. He blocked 4 punts last year, 2 against Sunnyvale that kind of turned that game around for us in our favor. But just the consistency, you know, if he could play that level all the time and dominate all the time, then he's going to have an outstanding year. But he works hard, and he's ready for his senior year.
And I believe he just got a scholarship offer to East Texas Baptist.
I believe he's got 3 or 4 of them right now. And so East Texas Baptist is one of them.
I think Hendricks was another
Hendricks one. Was another one. Howard Payne maybe was another one, and one more.
Okay. And then so your quarterback, you lost your quarterback last year, Tyler Townley.
Yes, sir.
Phenomenal quarterback. But do you with the way you've seen Jacob practicing or, you know, preparing in the off season. How do you feel? You feel there can be much drop off there?
Well, I think it'll be different, you know, and we're not comparing him to Tyler. We're not. I mean, it, like I said, this football team, he will take on our offense, will take on a new life and see where we go. But from the first day that we started to right now, there's been a huge amount of improvement through summer 7-on-7. You know, we were a play away from qualifying for the state tournament and only went to one qualifying tournament. We his knowledge of the offense, his knowledge of our scheme and what his reads are and how he reads has come on, and it's been very fun to watch. And so now that's got to translate to on the field. That's got to translate to Friday night.
I kind of skipped this part, but so obviously everybody had a tough year with the COVID. How did y'all combat that?
You know, and I'll go back to our administration and school leadership. You know, they provided us, our school board, our administrators provided us with protocol from the state and expected us to follow it. But whenever, you know, we followed it, we're masked, and we never had to shut down. We never had to shut down school or do anything. And it is resilient for the kids, too. We went on a hurricane schedule and so played a game in district every 5 days. And so, you know, just the resilience of our kids practicing on Saturday, you know, not – practice on a Sunday and then turn around and have to play a game on Monday or whatever it is. It was just phenomenal. But the leadership, you know, and it wasn't all roses, and there were some tough days and some hard days and days, you know, just the cleaning and washing and all that stuff that we had to do on a daily basis was a grind. But we had an outstanding staff and it was good.
You just spoke of administration. I think I just saw that you guys, I think you guys made a playoff in like almost every sport.
So with our boys sports, we won the district championship in football, basketball, and baseball, which is, I don't know that I've ever been a part of that before.
That's pretty incredible.
So we took a picture of those kids at the end of the year, and we're going to put them on a heat wrap on our wall because that needs to be the standard. We won the district championship in boys and girls golf. Our girls soccer team won two playoff games. Our volleyball team won a playoff game. Our girls basketball team made the playoffs. So there are some great things happening here program wide, and we're looking to continue and improve.
One of the things you said earlier was the one thing you took was from Coach Eschett.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the off season and the training? So obviously it kind of paid off here. Is that how you feel?
Absolutely. And here's the thing too, is before last season, we didn't have an off season because of COVID, but our kids were mentally focused, mentally dedicated. And a couple of them, handful of them, Tyler Talley included, come in looking really good because they took care of their bodies. They lifted hard. And it was good. So, but yes, it's very influential in our off season this year.
And it, so now that we're kind of past COVID, hopefully, you know.
Hopefully.
How's it feeling now? You know, it's kind of things getting back to normal.
Well, I got to thinking about this today too, and we're meeting with our seniors, developing our goals and our culture and what this football team is going to look like. But COVID will have an influence on us this year too, and it's what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what that influence is, I don't know. But I don't think we're quite out of the woods yet. We've got to take care of ourselves moving forward. And so we got to control what we can control. Don't worry about the things we can't. And be prepared for this year. But I think, you know, something will happen with COVID this school year.
Well, hopefully not, you know, hopefully everything gets
back to normal. I totally agree. Yes, sir.
So let me, I kind of wanted to ask you, if you were playing against Lincoln Riley, how would you defend him?
Golly, I don't know. So that was a long time ago and a different offense.
Yeah.
Ralph Mason is the head coach at Andrews, and he was Lincoln's offensive coordinator, and he was very multiple. So Coach Mason knew how smart Lincoln was and was very multiple, and we just basically got into the zone read stuff. Probably Muleshoe was one of the first ones to kind of really get into that in high school, but I would give Lincoln one look and then move a lot because how smart he is. I wouldn't let him know what we're in by our look, what we look like.
Let's say if you were on the same competition level as a coach, both of you guys defending his offense.
Oh wow! What I would do is I'd probably call Chad Glasgow at TCU, their defensive coordinator, asking for help because I would just try to win plays and win series. Because that offense is prolific, and it has been prolific for a long time, and they could score points. And we've got to steal possessions, and we've got to win possessions. I would not get tied up in the number of yards, the number of points. We've got to steal possessions, and our offense would have to be able to score. We couldn't win. You can't beat OU on defense. You've got to stop them some, but you've got to bring your offense to the party as well.
So let's go back to district. How do you feel about district coming up this season? I mean, you guys are ranked number 22 on Dave Campbell. How do you feel? Do you feel there's a little target on your back?
Yeah, they're crazy. we've done nothing yet. And like we told our team, we have potential, but potential means you've done nothing yet. So I think Sunnyvale is going to be the real deal. They're picked to win our district, and they're going to be extremely good like they always are. They're well coached. I have a ton of respect for John Settle. A ton of respect. Every time I'm around a football lecture, he's in the middle of it. We've talked. He takes care of his kids. I think our programs are extremely similar, not in what we do, but how we do it. The love of the game, taking care of kids, loving on kids, the importance of track, all that stuff is extremely similar, and he does a good job, and looking forward to competing against them this year. As well, I think community and Ford are bringing back a lot of kids, and I think both of those teams are practicing right now like they should win the district championship. And whenever they believe it and they practice like it, they're going to be tough. It's going to be hard to beat those guys. I think Farmersville as a new coach, and he will get them going. And Will's Point was extremely young last year, and Coach Pointer is in his second year, so they'll make some massive improvements as well. So our district is going to be super competitive. I think, anybody can beat anybody, and that's what that's what's hard for high school kids that we won last year. And now we got to convince them there's a new team, there's a new personality, and you got to be ready to go.
What do you think is going to be your personality, this team personality in 2021?
I don't know. I hope at the end of the day it's toughness. If that's our personality, then we'll be okay. And I don't know. I don't know. Last year I thought toughness was our biggest question mark, and at the end of the year that was our biggest asset. And so we've got to be tough and I hope that's what we'll be with this football team at the end of the day, too.
What do you think was the weakest link in your 2020 team that you want to improve on this season?
Just maybe last year with our special teams, we didn't have special teams lose games for us, and I'm ready to move that to where special teams can win us games, to where our punting, our kickoff, our return game can help us win game, our fakes and all that stuff. And so just looking forward to growing with that and getting after it.
How do you find a good kicker, or a punter?
Well, we got three good kickers. We really do. We're bringing Jonah Root back, and he is a four-year starter, I guess, for us. Mm-hmm. He's been all district, extremely good, works hard at it. And then we have two sophomores, Josh Ivey and Bentley McDaniel. Those guys are soccer players, and they can boot the dog out of it too. So kicking, hopefully we're set up a little bit.
It's nice to have that soccer program then.
I'm telling you, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Let's see. What makes Cattle Mill special to you?
The community, the people, the kids. You know, I've coached a lot of teams over my time. And then what these kids have, I feel like these kids have taken my family and my kids and my wife in and made us feel at home here. There was a lot of kids, whether it's Caden Davis or Connor Pounds or Brian Jones or Tyler Townley or Gavin Bean, or, you know, like they have taken my family in, and my wife, my kids love these kids like we've been here our whole lives, and they've done a great job, and I'm very thankful and very appreciative to those kids and their parents in this community for bringing us in. And even though we've been here for a short time, they've engulfed us and made us feel like this is our home.
That's huge, having the community support. What does it mean to you to be the head coach of this program, this community?
It means everything, you know. And not that the head coach, not that I have had anything to do with it, but just the honor, you know, to lead and guide these kids through good and bad times, and teach them life lessons, the good and the bad, and how to, you know, really, really, it's an honor.
Absolutely. Let me ask you a question. What was the toughest adjustment going from an assistant coach to a head coach for you?
Just every decision, you know, winds up in your lap. And as an assistant coach, you know, I could, you know, if it wasn't a decision that I wanted to make, I didn't have to make it. But as a head coach, every decision, you know, it winds up in you, and you got to make the easy ones. You got to make the tough ones. You got to, you know, make every decision. And delegation, you know, learning how to delegate has always been, you know, because feel like you want to work hard, you want to get after it, and you want to, and now you're in a spot to where you can't do everything that you used to do as a position coach or coordinator, and you have to delegate. So
putting together stuff that you want, how do you go about that?
Well, it's tough. And especially, like you said, there's jobs all over the state that's open right now, and we don't have any openings. So, first of all, Bruce McDonald is our offensive coordinator, and we've been together a lot. We have worked together a lot of those since I've been a head coach, a lot of those good memories, the Mahia game, the Bernie game, the Pleasanton game, all those games, the Pleasant Grove game, you know, we've been together, and we've had those. He has a lot of ownership in this program and works hard. Then our defensive coordinator played for us in San Angelo. He was our linebacker and our team captain, and had worked for us before, but now he is our defensive coordinator. And then after that, it's going to hire people that you know or that you worked with before, or you that know people that you know and that has the same goals, the same ambitions and mindset as we do in this program does.
When you're selecting a quarterback like Jacob, what are you looking for a quarterback?
A leader. Jason's got to be a great leader. Jason's got to be able to deliver the ball. We run a spread, and he's got to be accurate. Jason has a big arm. He could throw it to here to the football field in two throws. He has a big arm. But what we've got to have is accuracy. And so we're looking for those things and trying to develop them through offseason, through quarterback school, through our summer strength and conditioning and 7-on-7.
Let's see. I had a good question here. What would you say your number one strength going to 21 season?
I think it'll be skill position depth. you know, we're returning some kids. We have some kids moving up from JV, skill position depth, and you know, we. But I think maybe at the end of the year, not right now, but maybe at the end of the year, I think our offensive line is going to be pretty dang good. And I'm looking forward to seeing them progress. I'm looking forward to seeing them move and carry on and get better.
So you used to coach offensive line. What's the where are you looking for in your offensive line?
Toughness, smarts. Offensive line, and I'll believe this, whether it's now or later, or whenever, forever, is it's about first step and head placement. If you could get a quick first step where you need to go and get your head on the right side of their body, that is the you've won a lot of the battle. And so first step and head placement, we're looking for somebody that's aggressive and somebody that's smart and that can know it and adjust it and change it and get after it.
And what grinds your gear when you see something on the offensive line?
Lack of pad level whenever we're playing too high. We got to be low and take the fight. You know, offensive line and defensive line should be the first to the fight, and they got to be tough. And so we want somebody that will come off the ball, step, and deliver a blow and set the tone for our entire football team.
Coach, let's say if a fan wants to come to check out the Kettle Mill Fox. What's a good place to pregame meal to eat?
Oh, pregame meal to eat. Golly, I thought you were going somewhere else. Probably Bucky's. Bucky's is a restaurant, not the convenience store. There is a restaurant here in town named Bucky's, and it is home cooking, and it is phenomenal food. So I would even beg them to let you order the Scrambler, which is breakfast that has everything in it. Order that no matter what time of day it is.
So that's your go-to meal?
Absolutely, it's good.
And what's the toughest thing for you as an educator here? Where I'm going with this. What's the toughest thing? You're head coach. You have all this. You have to put a lot of time into your program as football and other sports, but and to education. What's the toughest adjustment for you?
Well, it's just the time that this job requires, and so the more time that I'm up here, the less time I'm with my family and my kids and my wife. My wife is outstanding coach's wife. Probably the best in the world, but you know, it's just the grind that it takes up here and the time that pulls me away from them.
How did you meet your wife?
In college.
How did y'all get together?
You know, just I don't know, just hanging out, seeing each other, and then we went out on a date and two, and then there we go. And we dated for quite a while. We were engaged for a year or so, and then been married 24 years. So
congratulations.
Well, appreciate it.
What kind of support do you have to have from a coach's wife to have a successful program?
Coach's wife is number one, absolutely number one. And whenever I'm talking to our coaches, I talk about coach's wife and coach's wife expectations, because there's nothing more venomous than a coach's wife whenever their husbands are getting yelled at the stands, because they know the amount of time. And we're not right. We're not perfect. Never are we perfect. But we're away. We give up our family for these kids. And so the role of the coach's wife is super important. And, you know, whenever young coaches are getting in this business, and it's, you know, it's important who you choose if you want to advance in this profession, who they marry, because the role of the coach's wife is extremely, extremely important.
So the time that you have to spend as a coach, what's that like as a coach? Like your day, during the season, what's your day to day?
Well, so here at Kettle Mills, Monday morning, we're on the field coaching our middle school kids at 6:30. we finish high school practice at 6:05, and then we got to get them back here. We got to shower them, you know, let them shower, let them change, and get out of here. And then we got to come meet. So we're getting home about 8, and we start at 6:30. So we leave the house, you know, whenever. That's Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday, early in the morning, and we let them go a little bit earlier on Friday, on Wednesday, and they're home probably by 5:30, and then Thursday, we have weights with our varsity before school, and then we're coaching a middle school or a junior high game, and then Friday is game day. Saturday, we're up here at 8. We want to see our family some on Saturday, so we're home by 5. And then Sunday, we want them to go to church, eat lunch with their family, and then we have a staff meeting at 1:30, and then we'll be here till 8 or 9.
It's a grind.
It is a grind. It is a grind, absolutely. But it's fun.
Yeah. How can you prepare for a grind like that?
You just got to do it. I mean, there's no preparation for it. You just got to put your nose to the grindstone and go work and get after it and enjoy it. Learn to love it.
Who would you say was your most influential coach, philosophy wise?
People that I've worked with.
It can be both or how?
They all, you know, my dad, Coach Wood, and Brent Davis had a big influence on me, and I made me into the coach I am today. And they both had their niche, you know. The coach that I played for, it's actually two. The first one, most influential, is Ron Rogers, and he is still coaching. He is the offensive line coach at Corpus Christi Flower Bluff. I've known him my whole life. He was my dad's defensive coordinator. He worked with us in Alice. He worked with us in San Angelo. So I got to work with him, and he's special, you know, just because he was my coach. He was my offensive line coach, and I love him like none other. And then another guy by the name of Jim Love. I never played it down for Jim Love. Jim Love was a basketball coach, and I played basketball in middle school, but not in high school. And Jim Love was just phenomenal. And I actually taught in his old classroom that one spring that I taught at Portales High School, and written all over all those walls, or "We love Coach Love, class of 1988 or whatever it was. And he's just a great guy, great man. And everybody loved Coach Love.
So, let's see. Let me think about this one. So you had a player that you mentioned that you had a rocky relationship and that's not like family. How was that? How did
it's that guy right there, Matthew Barnes. So he was at Grossbeck, and he would be a senior. And so whenever I go take over a program, the very first thing I do is I talk to all the kids, and I talk to them as a whole. And then the next thing we do is pull the seniors and talk to them, the incoming seniors, next year's seniors, and tell them, hey, we're going to go win, and we're going to win with you. And Matthew had poor body language. He was kind of sitting back, had his arms crossed, rolling his eyes. And, you know, it was his senior year, and who was I to come in and tell him? And it started pretty rocky. Coach McDonald and I, you know, we got after him. We suspended him for a half, and probably would have beat Lorena that year if he had played the entire game. And you know, just – rocky through his football season, and then after football season, whenever we still loved him and helping him, you know, with hurdles, and then, you know, we went to, he just at some point realized that, hey, you know, these kids don't just care about me as a football player, they care about me as a human being. And Matthew Barnes is one of us, and I love him. I mean, he'll FaceTime us, or we'll FaceTime him, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 times a month, you know, and just great people. And just that relationship of constant and steady, being consistent, you know, and so it really good.
So the coach and player relationship, that's very important. How do you when you're at a bigger school at a 4A compared to like a Miyoshi as mm-hmm. 2A, how do you develop that?
It's all the same. Love them. Love kids. I'm not afraid of it. We tell them we love them. And it's not just talk either. You know, whenever we got this job, we told them there will be a day that we hug you and we tell you we love you and mean it. Not now because I don't know you, but it will. You know, probably the neatest thing that had happened to us is whenever we left Gonzales. There was a newspaper article written about us telling the kids we love them, and our newspaper reporter heard it over and over and over and wrote an awesome article about it. But we do because we're around them, and hopefully we're a positive influence in these kids' life as they move into young adulthood.
Coach, thank you for doing this podcast with me. I want to congratulate you on the last season's success beating Pleasant Grove. Milestone victory for you and your career, and good luck for the rest of your career.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.